All right, welcome. This is Mike Delaney from ProThink Radio. Today is Wednesday, April 9th, 2008, and today we have a great guest on the show today with us. His name is Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. He is the author of an excellent book. It's called The Synagogue of Satan, and this book goes through detail the history of crimes that this elite group has been responsible for, and I'd like to bring you on the show today with us. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for inviting me onto your show.
Excellent, excellent. So how's it over there where you're at?
Oh, it's good. It's about 5 o'clock in the evening here. The weather's sunny. We've had a bit of rain for a few days, so it's nice to have the sun out again.
Now, I want to start off kind of chronologically how you got into writing this book, and if you could just kind of get into where you learned about these events and what led you into writing this book.
Well, I think to start off, I kind of, when I saw the Oklahoma bombing, the scenes from that and just the picture of the building, it was so obvious to me back as far as then that the building had been blown out, because we have around that time a lot of bombings over the years as I was growing up in London from the IRA. So they'd be using professional explosives, etc., Semtex and what have you. And we were led to believe that a truck bomb pot quite a way away and with a homemade bomb in it blew a building outwards. So I started going onto the internet and stuff and looking that up, and then that kind of led me to other sort of, I died off for a bit on that, and then I got into it a few years ago, and I was listening to The Usual Suspects, you start with the Alex Joneses and people like that. And the more I looked into it, the more I realised that these people were pointing you in the completely wrong direction. So I listened to different radio, and one guy that really impressed me, because what I would do is I would listen to a radio show, and this is going back, say, 2005. I'd listen to a radio show, and I would make notes as I listened to the show. So if somebody made a mention of a topic and, oh, this is what happened, then I would look it up for myself. And you tend to find, like with 9/11, there's fingers pointed all over the place, but you and I know the truth, and the people that try and dissuade you from that truth. And my attitude was to just write these things down, do my own research, and in the end, that led me to buying different books. I watched lots of different DVDs on various subjects, and I was just creating a timeline to document. When I figured that I figured something out, I would put that in my timeline, and it all started pointing back to this same Zionist group. So this timeline was growing, and in the end, I concentrated on the Rothschild family and direct links to them. And I sent this off to Dale Bradford Smith, who was the guy that I was impressed with, who I've been listening to from 2004-2005. I started with him in his GCN days. I missed the RBN days. Really, I emailed that to him. He put it up on his site, and I started updating it, and I started doing more and more research, and it was getting bigger and bigger, so it wasn't really able to be read on a website anymore, and it became a book. So I put that together. I printed, 500 copies myself. I set up a little website where people could buy it. I sent it to a few different people. Tex Miles was one of them. Cut a long story short, he wanted to buy a few copies from me to send out, to sell on his site. But the postage to America, even sending in bulk, was just not worth doing. And so I suggested that he may want to publish it, as he has his own publishing arm of his ministry. And he said, yeah, I will. Here's a contract. He sent that to me. And about 3 months later, I got the front cover in the post. I hadn't seen it. I didn't know what he was writing on it or anything. And then about a month after that, I got my copy of the book, which is the book that I did with a foreword by him and an index. So it's kind of gone from there, but it was, I like to go into these details because I want to encourage the listeners to, you know, I started off just as a listener, and I was only put this book in this timeline form because it was the only way I could figure out. I was just trying to get things how I could identify them chronologically. I'm not a trained author. It just kind of, the book happened by accident, really.
And this is an excellent breakdown of this criminal network. Now, when you start getting onto this topic, a lot of people will accuse that, oh, well, you blame it all on the Zionists. And I feel that this has been an underlooked at topic, and that it's especially important to actually detail the crime so we can get a bigger picture here. And that's what I've noticed in your book, that you've broken down all these topics that a lot of people will blame on other groups. And you come to find out it's the same group almost every single time.
Yes, I mean, the thing was, what I was planning to do was, when I started off my timeline of the Rothschild family that went up on Darrell's site, I was also working on, I was getting Bilderberg members lists from different areas and cross-referencing them, and I was literally going to set up a little site of my own, and, you know, just as a hobby, and I was going to have, you know, a news bit and a, you know, articles bit, and I'd have a bit about the CFR that I'd write, a bit about the Bilderbergers that I'd write. But then every time I kept lifting up a rock, it was this same group, and I was always led to believe it was the, it's the New World Order, or it's the industrialists, and it was all just money people coming together. But the more you looked at it, they were linked by this Zionism. And so in the end, I thought, there's no point breaking it all apart. This is a trick that people are playing out there. And that's why I put it in the format that it's in, because very simply, it all leads back to this group.
And that's exactly what I've come to conclude. I mean, it takes a person a lot of research, and that's what obviously you have done at this point, to actually look into all these events. And that's exactly what you do see behind almost every single event out there. I mean, it's amazing. And the fact that the light hasn't been shined on these people a little bit more, you know, we'll go all day over the New World Order and everything else, but, you know, it's these people that have been doing this stuff, you know. And I think one of the things that is important to do is, say, for instance, you read your book. Now, you have a website, if I'm not mistaken. It's thesynagogueofsatan.com. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mike, yeah.
Okay. And on there, you can, you know, purchase this book here, which, if you could go in, how far back you went into history, kind of just break down some of the years and maybe some of the topics that that you've detailed in your book there.
Well, essentially, it starts really about 1690. When the Amsterdam Jews came over to set up the Bank of England, but there is a section on there from 740 AD, which goes into the Khazarian aspect, the fact that this is where the title came from, with the revelation saying, beware of those, the Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, beware of those Jews. Beware of those who say they are Jews, but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. And it just, I found it very surprising. Well, not surprising with what I know now, but this group that we're encountering today, these Zionists, mainly Ashkenazi, which were East European from this era called Khazaria, which we go into in 740 AD, when their king got them to convert to Judaism. And 90% of Jews today are these Ashkenazi Jews. And so it kind of fitted together, which is why I chose that title. We go through the Rothschild family, the formation of the Masonic, well, the infiltration of Masonic lodges, 1776, Adam Weishaupt, right through to China Opium Wars. You've got people in there like Albert Pike later on. Both the world wars, obviously the setting up of the Federal Reserve. Heroes for me, I think my greatest American president was Andrew Jackson, because he did everything that he could to break down the central bank, and he succeeded. He even put a on his headstone, it just says, I killed the bank. That's how much he regarded that achievement.
Hey, Andrew, I got a good question for you about that. Well, how do you think Andrew would feel today about being on the $20 Federal Reserve note?
I know, it makes me, I mean, they've done that deliberately because, you know, they know that he'll be turning in his grave, but I read quite a bit up on Andrew Jackson. There was a, he had a little tic, apparently, and I think he used to, he'd either, when he got angry, he'd either raise his right or his left arm when he was startled or angry, just above his, towards his forehead. And I think when he was a 16-year-old, he'd been beaten in the face by a British soldier. And he developed that tic afterwards. But he really was a remarkable man. There was many assassination attempts on him. They're covered in my book, where it documents that the money came from England, the bankers, and we all know who they are. And as you said earlier, when you talked about it all pointing back to this group and it's surprising how people can't work it out, well, it's really very simple when you consider that the bankers do rule the world, whichever way you want to look at it. The bankers in all the countries are now printing their own money, so they can pick their politicians, and they'll either pick ones that are supportive to them, or they'll pick ones that are already blackmailed. They'll get them to do their dirty work. The reason the information doesn't get out is that they also, for example, Rupert Murdoch, he's backed by Rothschild, and so he's got this giant media empire. So, funnily enough, there's a radio station, which is the most, they call themselves the most popular commercial radio station in the UK, and they're called Talk Sport. And they generally have a lot of programs about sport, you know, soccer and stuff like that, covering different sports. But in an evening, about 10 o'clock every night, they have a guy on called James Whale. And that's most nights of the week. And every, couple of months, he has Alex Jones on. And this is a show that goes out nationwide in the UK at 10 o'clock at night till about 1 o'clock in the morning. And last time, a couple of weeks ago, he had Alex Jones and David Icke on together. And it's interesting how these are the sort of people they give the publicity to, because, again, they'll be a controlled... I don't doubt in my mind that these people are controlled, because, I mean, I was listening to Dale's show last night. I understand you've been doing this research for 18 months, 2 years, whatever. It doesn't take too long to come to these conclusions if you really want to investigate the facts. And I admire you for the work that you do, the call that you put into Alex Jones. I think that was excellent, and he's done a lot for exposing this guy, and the movement really needs a guy like you, because Darryl will do his historical research and his putting his books up there and his interviews and his rants. I've done my book, I just do the odd radio show now, but you're out there confronting people like Fine Gold and the movies, the DVDs or the film video you're putting together, and I think it's great that you've come out there, because you really another string to our bow.
Exactly. Well, you know, I started looking at this information, and, you know, I ran into Darryl myself online back in, I believe it was 2006, and it took me a little while to grasp, obviously, because, you know, you get fed so many confusing and mysterious groups out there. It took a while to grasp, you know, and that's only could be done with actually going and doing the research. And and one of the, as far as that call goes, you know, and when I called into him, you know, I just make it a little note, I guess, because it's a pretty hot topic at this point. I called in there just to bring up the topics, basically, of Benjamin Friedman and Jack Bernstein at that time, because I think, you know, just those two people alone also illustrate very well that it is this group, and it is solely this group. Now, one of the things that a lot of people ask, or that assume or get confused about, is the Illuminati runs the Zionists, and they don't understand how, I believe it was Weishaupt, you know, was funded by the Rothschilds to either create or infiltrate that. If you could kind of break that down, how it's basically the other way around on that.
Yeah, I think I'm pleased you brought that up, because as soon as you said it, I think I made a mistake with 1776 about infiltrating the Masons. It was actually the formation of the Illuminati, and the idea was to infiltrate the Masonic lodges through that, and then start getting the best brains, start to convert them. I've got a list, I think there's about 4 points under that year in my book. I think that might even be on the my site. I've got a few samples. I've got 5 sample years up on the site for people to read. But yeah, essentially what they always were after was this world domination type of thing. And because they been doing so well with the Rothschilds. What they started doing was, rather than money lending to different people on the street, they were actually doing it for royalty and ended up funding private armies and goodness knows whatever. So they had money coming out their ears. They had this cabalistic outlook, which for me is satanic in origin. And they were just desperate to get control of the world. And the first time they tried to do that was with the, I believe in 1815, which is when they had their first go at world government after the wars in Europe there, and Russia wouldn't sign up for it. And that was when Nathan Rothschild said that either he or his descendants would kill the Tsar or his descendants in the future. And of course they accomplished that just over 100 years later in 1917.
Exactly. Now this is kind of where we're at in America right now, where they've almost taken complete control of this country. And it should be noted that that's one of the most important issues that for people to understand, is that when they look at it and say, oh, the Zionists is only a group and they're equal to other groups, well, it's usually, when you look into this stuff and you look and you research it hard enough, you'll find that it is them or it is their blackmailed puppets. And that's where you get the other groups there that they control, you know, CFR, Bilderberg Group, all these groups. You know, they have a handle on all of these groups, whether or not they created them themselves or they infiltrate it and take control of it. But we're at a time in the United States here that, you know, they're definitely trying to accomplish a pretty big gig over here. If you kind of elaborate on what your views are, what their intentions are, knowing their history.
Well, I mean, they're up to a variety of things at the moment. Their aim, I think, for the United States is the merger there with Mexico, Canada, and what have you, and part of collapsing the U.S. currency. And that's when they're talking about that Amero and what have you. And then that kind of reflects on 1984, George Orwell, who a lot of people said wrote to expose this group, and I believe that he was actually a communist himself and was quite pleased of what he felt was about to come, was going to come about. And he talked about the world being broken up into these four different units. And so far we've got the African Union, the European Union, then we'll get the American Union. And we've just got Asia left, which they already got some link-ups going on with Australia, I believe. So it's all sort of coming to pass. I mean, for America, it's a shame that the country's in the way it's in. But one thing I will say to Americans out there is an important thing that you have is free speech. We don't have it in the UK. In the UK, there are certain things that you can't say. I mean, in countries like France, if you make any question about the Holocaust, it's, you're looking at jail time. In the UK, it's not as bad as that. But you can't, I think the laws over here are if someone feels that what you've said is going to threaten or harm them. And this is the key point. If they feel that, so not if a jury believes that, but if they feel that, then the prosecution can be brought, and it's based upon their feelings. And they'll come out with laws like this, and they'll say, well, that's because we want to protect these poor minorities or things like that. But it's the group, they know that by putting that law in, that's going to, in the end, protect them, because they'll say, oh, you're being attacked, it's anxiety's bad, and it's our religion, and we've got laws now that you can't criticise religion. And so they're only doing this so they can get in through the back door, because they know that they can't suddenly take the world over without, enough people waking up to be able to stop them. So they're looking at gun control. They're looking at how many times now have they tried to pass that hate crimes bill through in the US? I think 6-7 times that Kennedy's trying to push it through all the time. And, you know, you just look at what they're doing and look at who would really benefit out of that and why they would be doing it, and it always points back to this very same group.
Exactly, and I noticed, I don't remember his name offhand, but it was the vice president of the Canadian Zionist Federation. He was vice president back in the 70s. He was the founder of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and they happen to be one of the catalysts in trying to create a hate law bill, the H.R. 1955. They spoke in it in the hearings, And, you know, one of the things they brought up was that the Bible of conspiracies out there is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. And so they, you know, they toss in a couple of 9/11 truth groups in there and try to, you know, wrap it up as just all conspiracy theories. But this is exactly what they're trying to do, is cover themselves up in this. And, you know, they've done a good job at creating hate laws even in Canada. You know, it's no surprise that this guy, you know, was the vice president up there and creates the Simon Wiesenthal Center down here. So,
well, exactly. I mean, you know, if you look into that, and if they're going to try and create a union there, then I wonder which hate laws that they're going to apply to this union, Mexico, Canada, America, when it comes in. It looks pretty ominous that they would stretch the Canadian laws, certainly on that subject, across that new union that they want. I think that the, you know, the just leaving the borders open for illegal Mexicans to come over, Mexicans to come over illegally. That's another aspect of sort of literally just mixing all the races up. And the reason that they're doing that is because they want a one-world government. And if you can get lots of different nationalities in one country, you can say, well, this isn't England anymore, this isn't America anymore. You know, England years ago was, say, a white country, and America was white, and different things like that. And this isn't a racial remark here. What I'm trying to say is that if you look at, I cover the Communist Manifesto, and this is one of the things that they wanted to do, because if they can break down national identity, they can say there is no such things as nations anymore. We're all part of the same world, and you get this global this and global that. And then in the end, all it's leading to is they'll get their different sort of unions, like the European Union they've got, and then they'll just amalgamate all of them. And then they'll just have the one world government, and we all know who'll be running that.
Yeah, it's...
I'm reaching a bit, but again, and the other thing is that they say the protocols of the other side are, say a forgery. They never say it was a fraud. I think actually it was a court case where they could prove it was a fraud. But you map that together. I mean, I think there's a very good book by a guy called Robert Galen Ross, and it's called The Elites Don't Dare Let Us Tell the People. And what he actually does in that book is he writes about different subjects, and he'll put an excerpt of a certain area of the protocols, and then he'll write different things that have happened, but just map those protocols out. So I'm really unconcerned whether it's a forgery or whether it was made up or it was written by this group or written by somebody who eavesdropped on this group. Whoever did it was a lot more prophetic than Nostradamus, because these things are actually happening. And that's the other thing that I suggest to people. People, unfortunately, a lot of people who sort of started my book, they don't want to go through all the really stuff going back to 1690, 1750, 1850. They want to know about 9/11, and they want to know about the 90s and the current decade. And the book kind of goes up to 11 and conflict in 2006, which is when I brought it out. But I say to people, well, read from 1991, and then if that interests you, then go back a bit further. And that's why with the shows I've been doing with Dale recently to break it down, we've actually worked backwards. Because the reason I mention this point is that you've got these different people coming out now, and there's countless books on 9/11, they can't all be right, countless books on Kennedy, but you go back to your Nestor Websters and your Henry Ford, and, you know, we're talking about people that were writing when this group was still trying to get their control of the media, and that's the key. They had their control of the banking, but they were just getting their control of the media then. And that's why these historical books are so good to read, because they're written by people that are very well-educated people, very well put together, and these people can't all be wrong. It's as simple as that. So put down your Webster Tarpley and stuff like that and go and look at Archibald Moore Ramsay, for example, a British virtually an aristocrat. I mean, he was... He went to Sandhurst, which is, England's version of West Point, I believe, a military academy and what have you. And he spoke out about the Second World War, and he was jailed for it, and literally ruined by it. And he didn't do this for his health, he did it because he realised what was really going on. And people like this don't suddenly come out and go all loopy and write something like, you know, put this sort of material together. And there's so much out there, so I really suggest people give some of these older books a try. Go to IamTheWitness.com and they're on there, so you don't have to pay for them, you can have a scan through those. And it just goes to show that people have been writing about this stuff 100 years ago, more even, and it's exactly what we see happening today.
Yes, that's excellent books. Like, I actually had kind of paged through four different Nesta Webster books, because she illustrated this excellently back then. And, you know, I noticed, to jump on it, right around the time period of the 60s, I had noticed that, you know, they had got World War One and World War Two balled together really closely, and it looked like they were really looking to get into World War III immediately into the 60s, and it seemed to be an uprising of people that stood up against them at that time. You know, you had your Friedman, your Fagan, it looked like JFK was trying to step on those toes. What do you think happened back then? Because it looks like they had got stopped for quite a long time because of these people back then.
Well, I think certain things, certainly in the 60s, if we pick out the, with Kennedy, I think certainly the research that I go off on that is, Michael Piper did an excellent book on it, and it all seems to point to the fact that, Israel wouldn't let him, he didn't want Israel to have the nuclear weapons. He was doing everything he could to block them having that. He was also looking to print his own currency, so, same thing happened to him as happened to Abraham Lincoln about 100 years previously. But if we take something, for example, like the attack on the USS Liberty. I mean, that was just sheer bad luck on their part. They did everything they could. They kept firing on that boat, but the thing wouldn't go down. It's as simple as that. And so they could. The plan there was to. That would have been their false flag attack, say that Egypt did it, bring America in to fight Egypt, and so they could get all this area of control for them. I mean, Israel, what you've got on the star, the blue star, which is the same as I've got in red, which is how it originated, as it was a revolutionary symbol carried around by revolutionary Jews in Europe, and was actually in the red colour, the Star of David, that they call it, on the Israeli flag. In the red colour was the symbol that was hung above the first Rothschild shop. It was his counting house, if you like. They didn't have shop names, they just had symbols. And that now ended up blue on the Israeli flag. And the line above and below represent the Nile and Euphrates. And what that means is that they want all the land in between. This is something Yasser Arafat used to speak a lot about, and a lot of people have written extensive works on literally the origins of the Israeli flag, with lots of quotes from these different Zionist leaders like your Begin and Shamir and what have you, these people that end up prime ministers, presidents over there, that were, as Menachem Begin said when asked if he was if he considered himself a terrorist, he said, "No, I consider myself the father of terrorism." So there you have it. And these people end up running the country over there, and that should tell the listeners all they need to know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what I've seen in that too. Excuse me. So, like, so we look at some of these events that have led up to in 9/11, which you have documented in your book, and then 9/11 happens, and it seems to me at this point, looking at the events, that It definitely looks to me that, you know, that they've pushed to want to go, you know, like in the war in Iran and get a lot further on this, but it's looking like they're being stopped in their tracks, like from being able to go too much further at this point. Just me kind of optimistically looking at where they wanted to go and where they're able to go is two different stories at this point now. So do you see any hope at this juncture that, you know, maybe some players are behind the scenes kind of stopping them from getting any further at this point?
I don't think it's so much players behind the scenes. I think that in the end, and this is the reason they're so desperate to get the guns off the American public. I mean, you know, guns have been outlawed in Britain for many years, and we had a couple of very interesting things. It's always some lone nut that goes mad with a gun. That happened with a guy called Michael Ryan back in 1986, I believe, when he went out with a gun, and he'd been under all sorts of medication and what have you, and killed a few people, and then they outlawed a certain amount of guns. And then we had a guy called Thomas Hamilton, who did the massacre in Dunblane. He walked into a room of primary school children and killed about 8 of them, and then they outlawed the rest. And he was linked to pedophilia and what have you. And the guy who was actually the member of parliament for his constituency where this happened was a guy called George Robertson, who was a complete obscure politician, and then suddenly ended up defence secretary when Labour came to power a couple of years later, and ended up the head of NATO, and he's now a lord. And I remember the footage of him on the day that it happened, and he was walking around absolutely aghast, and it wasn't about what happened. You could see there was something going on in his mind, because he'd never been prepared for this. But I digress there, but the reason I point that out is that what you can't undermine is the human spirit. And in Iraq, I say to people, if you imagine that you've got, you're in your town or what have you, and suddenly a complete alien force comes in telling you what to do, and all we're told on the Western media is Saddam Hussein, what a tyrant, how evil, and blah, 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 and all this he was. Now, you know, I don't know enough about the bloke. I'm not saying that he was a saint, but what I will say is this. The Iraqi people seemed a lot happier with him in control than the situation they've got now. So, yeah, you can send troops in. You can send bomb them to smithereens, but you're always going to get people that are going to fight back. And so it's never going to be that easy a walkover. Same thing happened in Vietnam. They thought, oh, we could just spray this Agent Orange. I mean, now they can do over in Iraq. Yeah, they can nuke the whole place, but then it's going to be difficult for them to get the natural resources out if it's all radioactive. So they've got to be sending them out of ground units in. And I think that what's delaying them is the human spirit in those areas that are fighting back against them. And it'll be worse for them in Iran. They've really got to either wash their hands of all the resources in those countries that is part of the reason they're going there to get, and just nuke the place, or they've got to send ground forces in, and if they're going to do that, then they're going to get met with resistance, and they're going to have a job achieving their goal.
Exactly. Now, to get back to the war on guns in America, because that's a very key point here for them to bring this down, because it did in Australia, it did in the UK, we've done it in numerous other places, but, you know, I do believe that was their attempt with the Columbine incident, and, you know, they had, with that in Oklahoma City, they really, really were trying to put the foot down on it and using their puppet Clinton to take away the guns, and they weren't successful at that time. You know, now they got a Republican president in there, so they're supposed to play the role of pro-gun, and so what do you think they're going to try to push? I mean, I don't see how they can do it at this time. They pushed really hard during the Columbine in Oklahoma City to do that, and, you know, they put a ban, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what I would say is I think the New Orleans thing was a warm-up for that, because then they could actually take people's guns away as a sort of state of emergency without actually passing any law for that. So that was probably their warm-up for that, because they realise they're not going to get the guns. But again, you have to look at the propagandists out there. Who's so anti-gun? Michael Moore. And he makes all these, like, bowling for Columbine, showing all these children that have been wounded very badly and what have you, people that have lost loved ones, and, oh, we should just ban the guns and what have you. But criminals are the ones that have the guns. You know, I mean, in this country now, we've got all sorts of crime, and I mean, youth crime. I'm talking about 11, 12-year-old children confronting men on, you know, 48-year-old men on the street and stamping on their head till they're killed. And this is happening every week in this country because people don't have any ability to defend themselves. And so law and order's just gone out of control. But the interesting thing with the Michael Moore aspect, you see, again, these are the sort of people that say, oh, let's get rid of guns, they're bad and they're terrible. And then his agent's brother is Rahm Emanuel, who's this Zionist high up in the Democrat Party. So they all link together, and they're you know, the bankers have got the control because they've got the money. They've been working out how to blackmail politicians as part of their Illuminati plan, which goes back to 1776. So if they haven't perfected it by now, they never will. And then they've got their media to keep the public dumbed down. And then they'll just reach out and they'll get the alternative media as well. They'll even set people up in this alternative media, like a lot of people we know. So really all we can do is we're kind of a guerrilla force out here trying to fight for our freedom. You've got your site and Bose Dowell and I've got the book, and we can just go out there and just keep trying to wake the people up. And hopefully, you know, if we do one show and it wakes two people up and then they wake someone up, it's still worth doing a show just to get people to get this message out, because it's only going to be a groundswell of people that are going to effect change. I don't believe there's going to be any sort of danger. I mean, just look at this Ron Paul that all these people are promoting, and when you did sort of digging on him, you could see what a unsavory character he ended up to be.
Yeah, I definitely see that there is a groundswell that is waking up to the Zionist Mafia. I mean, it's getting really big. I think a lot of people are having a hard time grasping that this is the king snake, the heart of the octopus here, and you know, they've been trying to do a lot of damage control out there with their disinfo agents to try to just put it as, oh, it's a red herring, oh, that's not the top, or, oh, that's just a piece of the pie. And, you know, okay, with that being said still, if you still believe that, then how come, you know, people are so readily to go against Bush and go against Clinton and go against Bilderberg Group and go against the New World Order, but you don't see anybody actually fighting the Zionist topic? You know, it's like a lot of people still agree that that's a big piece of the pie, or that's a piece of the pie, but they won't touch it. And the matter of fact is it is a huge piece of the pie in the biggest section. And if we get everybody focused to look at that topic alone, you would see that it befalls a lot of the crime that's been going on, like you document in your book, The Synagogue of Satan, for hundreds of years now.
Yes, I think that, I mean, what I would also say to people is, I'll give you an example. In Britain, we had a Conservative, which is, you know, our version of the Republican Party, if you like, in power from 1979 with Margaret Thatcher, and they were in power, and she went in about 1990, I believe. John Major took over, he went in 97, and then Blair came in. So you're looking at 16, 17 years of these people, and they were all into their privatisation and what have you, so they were taking publicly owned, for example, our telecom system in the UK was just one system, British Telecom, but they controlled all the phones and telecommunications, and then they were privatised, and what they would do is they would sell them off and say, oh, we're selling them to the public, and this is the price of the share, and then the price of the share would be quite a reasonable level. I remember my parents actually buying some, because you had to apply, and then you'd buy these shares, and then you could literally sell them for about 30% more the very next day. And then they'd be going up, and then miraculously, when most of this stuff had all been privatised, I mean, Shell, British Petroleum, that was it, British Petroleum, was a state-owned company. They were privatised, and as soon as they were getting all these out of the way, suddenly we had that stock market crash, which was very convenient, so the people that actually wanted control of all these companies got control. So they do these different things, but I raised that, and for the simple reason that I've asked people the question, when Labour Party came in with Tony Blair in 97, the privatisation continued. Now, it was always that Labour, our version of the Democrat Party, were into the state-owning assets and wealth being spread amongst the people, etc., etc., a form of socialism. And the Conservatives were more like, oh, let's sell it off and for our big friends in big business and all this sort of stuff. But nothing changes. And if you look at, Daddy Bush, or even going back as Reagan, then Daddy Bush, then Clinton, then this idiot that we've got there now, and you examine how many times these people have changed policies that were already in force. They don't change them. And they're supposed to be of the other end of the political spectrum. Well,
if that was the case, then each time we'd have a different government come in, then a lot of things would change, but they never do. They just give you an illusion of change. They come in and everything stays the same. And that's because they're simply all singing off the same hymn sheet, which has been given to them by this Zionist group, and they wouldn't be there if they weren't prepared to sing off that hymn sheet.
Exactly, exactly. That's, you know, and that's pretty clear to most people now that, you know, these people are all working together. It's just, you know, it's so difficult sometimes, like I said, to try to illustrate who is the man behind the curtain on all this, you know. And one of the other issues I was going to bring up to you, too, is this AIPAC trial that's coming up. And I've been a pretty big advocate for trying to raise awareness on it. And last I read now, it's postponed indefinitely. And,
oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm trying to, you know, I was trying to rally up some support, you know, like, for instance, the Ron Paul supporters out there, you know, they had a big swell of people, and, you know, it's been my belief that that was been a distraction to support the man and not the message. And, you know, you got somebody like the head prosecutor who was pushing this case forward, Kevin DeGregory, drops out to go work for a Zionist law firm after, you know, a month before his trial was to come, and now they postponed it. You know, and it's these types of things that, you know, we do have a chance to fight these people, but it's going to take people to understand that this is the mafia that we need to take down. And, you know, I find it pretty disappointing that the ball was dropped on that whole incident. So, you know, they bought themselves some time at this point, and you know, they brought back people like Wolfowitz now, as WMD advisor to Bush. You know, they got all their key people in place. If you look at what they did during the Bolshevik Revolution, it's looking pretty similar at this point, you know, so.
Well, it's worked before, so they're going to do it again. And, I mean, the thing is that, what you notice, it's kind of more prevalent in America than it is in the UK, and that's the sheer amount of Jewish people in the government over there when they're supposed to represent less than 2% or 1% of the population. I mean, it just simply doesn't stack up. In this country, we, you know, like Foreign Secretary Jack Straw was from this community and this group, different things like that. It's not as obvious in Britain, but I think a lot of it's crypto or a lot of it is blackmail. I think it's not just that side. It's almost, I mean, as I said before, you know, Tex Mars put my book out, and at the time, the one concern that I had was he's always been very close to Alex Jones, and I've, you know, gone through this a lot in my mind. I emailed Eric Hufschmidt about it and said, look, what do you think? I mean, you know, the good thing is it'll probably get out to a far wider audience, which it has. I mean, he's shifted, you know, I think at least 8,000 copies now. And, of course, I've only printed 500. And so you have to ask the question, do you go with someone who the information he puts out always seems to be quite accurate? He talks a lot about Zionism and stuff, who at the same time regularly promotes Alex Jones, and he can't win. So in the end, I made the decision that let's go with it. He wants to do it. And I think that it's been worth doing because it's got it out to a wider audience. And, you know, you can buy it on your Amazon.com now. You put an index in it, which makes it far easier to navigate around and a better reference tool. But so I'm just saying it's at all levels, really. It's there's infiltrators in the level that we're at. And, of course, they're out there in the forefront of government.
You're absolutely right, and it should, you know, be noted, too, that Tex Mars actually married Alex and his wife, so they're definitely close. But that raises an important issue, too. You know, so some of these people out here that certainly don't illustrate this to be as big as it really is. You know, I've looking at the stance I've been taking, and I've been pretty aggressive in my attacks and my philosophy on cleaning up the house and everything. But, you know, I think you made a point there. It's more important that we get the message out, and even if it has to go out through sources that are questionable, I think at this point, that's, you know, if these are the kind of people that we have to go through, you know, it's just the objective is to get this message out there, and I think it's working very well because there's a lot of people out there that have woken up to this, and they're coming along pretty quickly at this point, which seems to me that this criminal group is getting very, very afraid and they're backed into the corner about this stuff now, because there's no defense to this. There's no explanation. There's no defense. They've used a tactic at this point where they can't hold the information back, so they throw a lot of garbage out there for people that have to sift through to find the truth. And, you know, it's bought them some time, but the inevitable is going to happen. You know, more people are going to wake up, which, you know, makes you wonder what's their next move going to be at this point. What's your view on that?
Well, I mean, I was shocked by the audio clip you had of you phoning up Alex Jones, because he always used to say, because I haven't listened to this guy for years, but, you know, I've heard the odd clip here and there when he said something like, try to blame, you know, the USS Liberty on Johnson, and Israel was all innocent and all this absolute nonsense. But you said Benjamin Friedman and Jack Bernstein, and these are cross-referenced by so many people, and what they said has proved to... Bernstein really wrote more of his own experiences, whereas Friedman wrote of the history as it had happened, and there's so many sources for this, it's just coming out of your ears. And how someone could just dismiss it like that, and then I couldn't believe the language that he used on you, because he always used to, if anyone thought, might say the slightest bit of profanity on his show, oh, this is a family show, and so I don't know if he's changed the time or whatever, but if he thinks he's going to get any sort of credibility out of that, I think that he's really... It just goes to show that this is hitting them. It's probably hitting them in their pocket now, because more and more people are waking up. And they, you know, this guy is so obvious that you don't have to look into what he says for long to realise that he's pointing you in the wrong direction. And what these people have always done is they'll tell you 90% facts, and then they'll do an Alex Jones, or they'll do a David Icke, and David Icke will say, oh yes, but it's all shape-shifting reptiles that are behind this, and the Queen of England is a shape-shifting reptile, and you know, just absolute nonsense like this. And so the reason they'll do that is that they'll take all the stuff that's out there, and by tying that message to it, it discredits the information that's out there, and that's been the ploy that they've been using for a while. But too many of us are waking up, and it's put pressure on them, and so now they're not just panicking, they're just getting upset, and they're not being able to control themselves on air like they used to. They've lost the confidence they always had, because, you know, 5 years ago they could tell you anything they wanted and people are just like listening like with a look of disbelief on their faces. But now people are doing their own research, they're realizing that these people are talking absolute nonsense most of the time, and they're not very happy about it, because you know, they see people moving away from them.
Yeah, and if you notice, there was a very, very telling part of that clip that I had, you know, when I called into Alex's show, is when I first, you know, was bringing up the fact that, you know, it's a very, you know, it's, when you hear a lot of them, especially Alan Watt, I mean, he's an absolute pro at confusing people about this mysterious group and feeding them a line of crap, is that you notice they cut me off in the beginning, and they used the words they, the elite, they.
Yeah.
You know, who's they? Who's the elite? You know?
Like, no, exactly. I mean, but this is the whole thing. They do sound bites. This is what it's always like. You know, weapons of mass destruction. You say it enough, and you know the drunk on the street corner who's been there 5 years has heard of weapons of mass destruction. It's an advertising thing. It's like an advertising slogan. You know, they'll get an advert out, you know, time and time again with a, and so everyone remembers the slogan, so it gets you subliminally. And that's why they're doing that. They, the elite, New World Order, stuff like that. They won't say anything with Zionism in it or anything with relating to Jews in it, because they're sort of trying to direct you away from this group. And so, yeah, I totally agree with you. And the other thing that I noticed that they did was you said something and then they went off speaking for about, you know, a good minute and a half with you hanging there, and then when you got a chance to speak again, then you said, you know, Jack Bernstein and Benjamin Friedman. They just didn't even, you know, if they've got something to say on that, say it. Say, well, I disagree because of Benjamin Friedman. And then he's calling it, he just goes, you punk, you coward, and then F you, F. I mean, it's just absolutely pathetic, and this guy considers himself an intelligent researcher. What I would encourage listeners to do, because this really makes my blood boil. But I would encourage them to download that clip of him giving it all this FU to Mike here and email it to Tex Mars, and if plenty of you do it, and say, why do you stand by this man? And let's see what happens. And, you know, I'd be happy to withdraw my book from him, quite honestly, because I'm getting absolutely tired of, you know, the association that he's got with this guy. You know, he's just really, really frustrating, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely understandable, but, you know, I guess...
I mean, in the end now, it's sort of going up. I mean, with the work I've done with Darrell, I think we've got the first five or six parts up there. There's only four more to go. And so people can actually go to Darrell's site and they can view the, you know, over half of it for free online. And the reason that we've done it like that is if you put it all up at once, people are just going to skim read it. If you put it up at a tenth at a time, which is only about 12 pages in a Word document to read, people will read it. And if people read it, they'll do their own research, they'll talk to other people, they'll wake people up. That's all we're after. We want to wake people up the most effective way possible. And so you do it in bite-sized chunks. You know, it doesn't bother me if I sell any more copies of my book or not. I'm pleased that the amount that got out there has gone out there because so many people have emailed me and said, you know, you've woken me up, and that's all I set out to do.
And you've done a very good job at documenting this history, and there is no argument with the facts that are in there, that's for sure. Now, one of the other issues that I wanted to bring up, too, is, the books, you know, Alan Watt had made a comment about, the books that they're promoting and blah, 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 is they don't realize that it's a CIA-run operation. And I'm thinking, is Nessa Webster a CIA operation? Because she wrote those books before they were even created. You know, it's like...
Oh, yeah, well, the CIA came out of the OSS, and there was, British intelligence involved behind that. And that was all stemming from these people. Because, you know, the Royal Institute of International Affairs was the first one set up in about 1920. And that's where all this lot stemmed from. And so, you know, if Watt wants to come out and say it's CIA, well, who controls the CIA? You know, it's laughable. They'll take you back. It's like someone saying, it's the Bilderberg Group. Well, who controls the Bilderberg Group? Who pays for them to go and meet in those hotels? You know, it's all out there. And it's just how many layers of the onion do you want to peel back? Some people just want to say, it's George Bush, so they'll pull one layer back. And some people go back further than that. CFR, they'll pull another layer back. But I've pulled the layers back as far as I can find the layers to go, and unless there is a shape-shifting lizard underneath one layer that I've not pulled back, I think that I've got to the root of the matter, and that's that, you know?
Well, now, they could buy your book, you said, on the website, thesynagogueofsatan.com, and I'll have a link on prothink.org for that, too. I guess we'll go ahead and wrap up this interview. If there's anything else that you wanted to say to people listening regarding your book, let's go ahead and get that out there for you.
Yeah, all I'll say, Mike, is that there's basically two versions out there. There's the original edition that I did, which is the edition I printed 500 copies of. I've only got about 30 of those left. They all go out. They're the ones that I sell off my site. Basically, they don't have the index in them, but they don't have the forward, but it's the original book that I wrote. They go out signed, so if you're going to order it off me and it's for a friend or something, make sure that you put a note in your PayPal order to say, please make it to whoever. If you want the one with the index and the text miles forward, then, you know, you're looking at Amazon.com or textmiles.com. You know, these different Amazon sites around the world stop that. So I just want people to get the copy that they want. As I say, if you want the find the original, get it from my site. If you want the one with the index, then you can find it at various stockists around the world. I only accept PayPal, so you have to have a PayPal to get it through me, I'm afraid.
Well, I appreciate you having you on for the interview today. This, again, is Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, and he is the author of The Synagogue of Satan. And I definitely highly recommend to go buy his book and look at the facts that are in there because they're undisputable. They'll give you a better picture of what the history is behind these people and the crimes that they've committed and been behind. You'll be quite surprised how deep this really does go, and it'll better illustrate you illustrate to you how how big this is, and that'll also help us fight who the real criminals are out here. And well, thank you again, Andy. We'll definitely have to do another interview soon and touch on some more topics here.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. And yeah, I'd love to do another interview with you. And I'd like to thank you as well for all the work that you've done in such a short space of time since you launched ProThink.org. It's a great site. You're out there all the time at the forefront, and you know, I think guys like Darren and myself have been waiting for someone like you to come along and really get in the faces of these people, and you're doing an excellent job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's right about the, I think about the 6-month anniversary I started my website. I've been trying to kick some butt as much as possible. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, well, this is Mike signing off from ProThink.org. Again, it's Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. You can go to synagogueofsatan.com, and we are signing off. Take care, and have a great one, everybody. Bye-bye.